boogeyman is real, and you found him.
All right, you primitive screwheads, listen up.
What's blood for, if not for shedding?
I'm your number one fan.
I like to dissect girls. Did you know I'm utterly insane?
We all go a little mad sometimes.
Be afraid. Be very afraid.
7 days. I am Dracula.
We have such sights to show you, boy.
I said, I'm not gonna hurt you. I'm just gonna bash your brains.
I am the eater of worlds and of children.
What's in the fucking box?
They're coming to get you, Barbara.
One by one, we will take you.
Never get out of bed again!
You gotta be fucking kidding.
It rubs the lotion on its skin or else it gets the hose again.
Welcome to prime time, bitch!
Welcome, horror fans. It is Wednesday, 7 p.m. Central Time, and it's time for another episode of the Week in Horror Podcast, the only podcast that wants to see what your insides look like. And if you, dear horror fanatic, are listening to us at the top of the week, remember, we do this right here on YouTube every preceding Wednesday. So come and join us. Hang out in the live chat. You know, what are you waiting for? Come. It's just a freak show of just horror fanatics and things we talk about. So come and hang out with us. This week, we are looking back at select horror films released April 14th through April 20th. Thank you all so much for joining us for what will surely be a bloody good time. I am JL. I am holding the fort. I do believe Eugene will be joining me later. So possibly, I'm sure, I think. But don't hold me to that, because currently, right now he's on set setting up for a shoot for tomorrow. And sometimes those can drag on a little long. But thank you all for joining me. So this should be a lot of fun. We have a fascinating episode tonight, and I know that for those of you who are aware of the films that we were going to talk about tonight, I know that a couple of them, you know, there's not a lot to dive in there, but we do have one film that it's going to get really interesting. So, because it bleeds into real life, you know, which is why there's a wild story behind it. I cannot wait to get into it. It should be really, really good. And I can't wait for Eugene to get here, or maybe even Johnny might pop in. I have no idea. But if one of them pops in, I can't wait to hear their thoughts on this as well, because it's really, really slick. Anyway, good to see everybody. See a bunch of awesome people in the live chat. And first and foremost, before we get anything started, we have to make sure that we thank our patrons by putting up the patron banner. There it is down below. All those amazing names you see running, scrolling alongside. Those are all the people who helped to make all of this possible. Not to mention, we're going to be announcing it very, very soon. Every single week, we get a little bit closer. And we are much, much closer, because over the past couple of days, we had we finally got some sit-downs, and everything's good with the correct people. And so we are seeing that's the thing about it. When you're making movies, the gears turn slow until they suddenly start turning fast. And so we are looking forward to making a huge announcement. And we wouldn't be able to make that huge announcement if it weren't for all of them, all the people here. Thank you to our amazing patrons who help us to make all this possible. So we can't wait to share all those details with you. So, look forward to that. But thank you to each and every single one of you. You know who you are. Your names are down there. You make this thing possible. So we love you for it. Thank you very, very much. All right. Who do we have in the live chat tonight joining us for this? Let's see. I see. First and foremost, Travis Brown is here, who's first in the chat. Says, evening, y'all. Just watched Night Swim this past Monday on my birthday. Happy birthday to you, sir. And the pool scene in Poltergeist is much scarier. Yes. Night Swim, for all of Blumhouse's impressive technical capabilities, the cameras they use and the editing and the in-camera effects and the practical effects that they utilize, it really is just homages to the stuff that we grew up with, you know, back in the 70s, the 80s, and the 90s. And you know, that's what I keep saying. I see moments that look really good in Blumhouse that stylistically are really nice, but they always harken back to the previous stuff. It's like, wow, that reminds me of that movie, of this other movie that came out like 15, 20 years ago. So, but still, otherwise, and also I didn't really quite like how the third act played out, but nonetheless, but happy birthday to you, Travis Brown. Thanks for being here. Raven Darkstar as well. And yes, they mentioned in the live chat, Raven, you did win the last trivia prize was donated to you by the winner. So congratulations, Raven Darkstar. That's good. Should be coming to you quite soon. So look for that in look for that coming in shipment as well. Let me see. Raven Darkstar also said, forgot it was Wednesday and wasn't paying attention till the time but still made it. You did make it. I saw you hanging out. So thank you for being here. Case Cooper's here as well. John Monahan says, what up, scary people? Good to see you, good to see you, John. Thanks so much for hanging out. Well met to you, Casey Cooper. Appreciate you being here tonight. Let me see. Let me see. Turing Test 2 is here. Good to see Turing Test 2, who also has become a new member of the Army of the Dead. Thank you so much, Turing Test, for that support. And please enjoy all of the horror icon emojis that you now have access to and the channel badge. So appreciate that, Turing Test 2. Sarcasm's here. Says, good evening, all you fine folks. Good to see you, Sarcasm. Appreciate you hanging out. Left-handed Jedi as well says, evening all. Good to see you, left-handed. Appreciate you being here. Let me see. Yes, it was Angel Rivera who answered the question and gifted Raven Darkstar the prize because of the air horns. So, but appreciate that. Thank you very much. Rodent No Last Name is here. Gabba Gabba to you. Good to see you, Rodent. Appreciate you hanging out. As well as I see Joshua Lee. Good to see you, Joshua Lee. Oh, yeah. Casey Cooper says, the Corona Zombie poster looks like Team Skeptic behind the mask. Team Skeptic is a good friend of the channel. And that picture does kind of look like him, you know, around the eyes. It does. It's kind of creepy. So we noticed that when we were looking at when I was pulling it. When I was making the thumbnails, I was like, holy crap, that does kind of look like Team Skeptic behind that mask. You know, all gaunt and kind of like, you know. Don't tell him I said that. Jin Ju is here. Good to see you, Jin. Thanks so much for hanging out tonight. Appreciate you being here. Yep, it was just a minute, but I was thinking that I got a message from Eugene that he was going to be a little bit behind. Let me see who else is here. Angel Rivera is here. Good to see you, Angel. Thanks so much for hanging out tonight. We do appreciate it. As well as, let me see. Yes, we all did survive the eclipse, Raven Darkstar. Nothing happened except what we expected to happen. So, you know, but maybe they'll come up with a new date, you know, maybe they'll predict some other date in the future. They likely will. Aaron Reese is here, says, hey, horror horrors. Good to see you, Aaron. Thanks so much for hanging out. Plot Hole is also hanging out in the chat, who says, who has been a member for 6 months. Appreciate that, Plot Hole. Thank you for that membership milestone. And he says, his back is fucked up. So sorry to hear that, Chief. There always seems to be a problem with you. Always something coming up, either on set or you're sick or your back hurts or the kids are too loud. I'm just fucking with you, mate. Aaron Reese says the prize is, in fact, 2 official Week in Horror air horns. I promise I won't do multiples. I promise I won't. You have my word. All right. So we got a lot of excellent people here. Good to see everybody here. Aaron Reese has stopped doing an impression of me. That's true. That's absolutely true. All right. So all you amazing people in here, we got some interesting stuff to talk about tonight. I'm trying to draw it out to give Eugene time to get here because there's some really interesting stuff to talk about. Andrew Rivera says, we can or don't forget the get off my lawn scream. Oh, hell yeah. Definitely. Aaron and Johnny, the gimps of horror. Absolutely. They are the gimps of horror. They are our resident gimps. I'm a horror fan. my back. I have to lie down. Got to put the TV up above me so I can look up at it. Otherwise, my neck will hurt too. Oh, I love poking fun at them. They just make it so easy. They do. Yeah, and Aaron's, you know, a ginger, so it just makes it all the easier. You know, it does. Holy shit. You know, but I guess his back doesn't hurt too bad because the motherfucker's in the house.
It says my back hurts.
Your back does. Apparently, your back does hurt.
Yeah, I'm dying over here, but I'm surviving or something like that.
Is somebody showering?
No, that's dinner cooking. Me.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Hi, buddy.
Hey, you had to come on via your phone?
I did. I couldn't make it from here. I couldn't make it from here to there.
It's literally 5 feet.
Well, it's more than 5 feet, but I couldn't make it from here to there.
You know, you could have just wormed your way over there. How about roll? You could roll your way over there. We'll just slather you in Purell and let you just kind of undulate your way there.
Well, I better get back to dinner, but I wanted to stop by and say hi to everybody because I miss all you guys.
There he is. He is alive.
Yeah,
I have not locked him in the Week in Horror vault, so he's there.
Yeah, I'm here. I miss all you folks. Yeah. What are we doing next week?
What films are we talking about next week?
Yeah.
Next week, let's see, that'd be our 31st episode. So, episode 531, Creature from 1985, Virus Undead, which is a German, zombie film from 2009, The Dark Half, from 1993, Stephen King adaptation, The Dark Half with Timothy Hutton, and of course, Evil Dead Rise.
All right.
You didn't make a face until the first one there.
Until Evil Dead Rise, because that movie's fucking garbage.
No, it's not.
Yeah, it is.
Fucking blasphemy.
That's objectively garbage.
No, it is not. Perfect blend between Alvarez and Raimi. Movie
debate. Perfect blend between cash grab and piece of shit. Sorry, Fede Alvarez, but that movie's garbage.
He didn't direct it.
I know he didn't direct it.
Yeah, so, I mean, but it was, the director was smart enough to take what worked for Alvarez and what works for Raimi and bring the two of them together.
And then completely fuck it up.
He didn't fuck it up.
Oh, he fucked it up. It was terrible.
How?
The movie was awful. The story was stupid. There are more plot holes in that fucking movie than there are in my name. It is so bad.
There are no, what plot hole? Name one. Other than you sitting in the theater watching the movie.
I didn't go to the theater to watch that piece of shit. I'm going to spend money on that.
So you rented it.
What's that?
So you rented it.
Yeah, I rented it. Yes.
The opinions of Johnny O are his and his alone. It do not reflect the opinions of the Week in Horror podcast.
They do reflect a member of the Week in Horror podcast. No, I'm sorry. I didn't like the movie because I thought it was... I'm trying to think of a nicer way to say garbage. But I can't. I can't think of a nicer way to say garbage. It was too much sensationalism, not enough story.
But that's not a plot hole. You said there were plot holes in it. What plot hole?
Yeah, there are plot holes in it. You know what? I've taken some back medicine, so I'm not going to sit here and go through my Rolodex.
Very fucking convenient. Very convenient. But yes, yeah. Rodney Ellis' name is right. We could save. So if you deign to appear next week, to grace us with your presence, then we can definitely discuss it next week.
We will. And you know what? I don't appreciate that from you. You know what I've been doing, what I've been working on, sir. Fuck. All this I do for you.
It's all for you, Damien.
Yes.
It's all for you.
No, we didn't even know that. All right. We'll see you guys. I swear that I will do everything I can to be on next week's podcast. I will. I was on this week's podcast. I'm on right now.
Well, not so much because
kind of.
I mean, this week we're going to talk about how making horror films and being a horror filmmaker can drastically affect your personal life in real life and have, you know, consequences depending upon the community that you you live in. So
yeah.
The big story behind one of the films. So we're going to dive into that. That's heavy duty shit, but
it is.
You're not here.
And I kind of have a personal anecdote to go along with that, but. Yeah, I'm not there, even though here I am.
Well, if you're able to join us next week, then we can definitely dive into why you're wrong on Evil Dead Rise.
No. No, we'll dive into why I'm objectively correct.
You are not objectively correct. You are objectively wrong.
Correct, sir.
Yes.
Those are good. You can turn that off. All right, I got to get back to cooking.
All right, bud. Thanks for popping in.
We'll see you guys
later. Oh, he's so wrong. He's so utterly wrong. Anyway, so yes, everybody's like, you know, wait till next week. We'll definitely dive into that. I hope he's here. I hope he shows up because he's going to have some splaining to do. He really, really will. He failed in trying to describe why Mandy fails. So he's going to fail on why he's going to be able to. I say, what plot holes exist in Evil Dead Rise? I'd very much like to know. So we'll get into it. I promise we'll get into it. I see we got some new people up in here. Good to see you, everybody. I see Tang Whistle CPM is here. Says, yep, Johnny popped in for a moment. Good to see you, Tang. Facty as well. Good to see you, Facty. Thanks so much for being here. NANA is hanging out as well. Good to see you, NANA. Who else did we have? See, Mike71 is here. Says, yeah, Johnny trimmed his beard. He did. He cut his power off. That's why he's wrong. In everything he says, that's why he's wrong. Because he lost it all. You know, the power, that's where the power is, you know. But, you know, like Samson. Oh, let me see who else we got here. Obviously popping in. Make sure I didn't miss anybody. Oh, so many names pop by. Yes, okay, there we go. All right, cool. So, got everybody there. Yes, he's going to have some explaining to do. He absolutely will. All right, but we've got stuff to talk about tonight. But first and foremost, because, oh, and thank you very much, NANA, who just gifted 5 memberships to the Army of the Dead. Thank you so much, NANA. Welcome, Gosh of Heckfire, J-Verz, Liam Wakefield, Aussie Boomer, and the Obsoletist to the Army of the Dead. Please enjoy your new emojis and your channel badges. We do appreciate that. Thank you, NANA. Very generous. All right. So, like I said, we do have stuff to talk about tonight. And the first and foremost, the big thing was, is I told y'all last episode, last week, that I would show this because we were talking extensively about the upcoming Pooniverse, which is Winnie the Pooh, Blood and Honey 2, and of course, Bambi the Reckoning, Pinocchio Unstrung, and essentially the Twisted Childhood universe, which is kind of like the Twisted Childhood, I guess this version of the Avengers, they're kind of the filmmakers riffing off that. So, but I promised y'all that we would watch it, and so I have the trailer here for Bambi the Reckoning, if you haven't watched it yet. So let's give this thing a look, let's cue up the terror tube, and you're right. It doesn't have a remote. It's one of those ones you have to actually twist. Because that's the ones we grew up with. Those are the best. Cue up the terror tube! So that was the Bambi the Reckoning teaser. Oh, man, oh, man. So I... Obviously, that was actually wild. The deer attacking the car was pretty insane. But there you have it. We watched the teaser. And it shows very, very little. Obviously, the hunter at the very beginning is like, have you ever shot a deer? He's like, no, have you? He's like, once. Obviously, that's the hunter that killed Bambi's mom. And we're gonna see Bambi get his revenge. So this should be supremely, the fact that Bambi is roaring like a bear, or, you know, and sarcasm puts up, it's like, Bambi got swole. Yes, that is a serious, serious Bambi. So Bambi's not fucking around. But yeah, that is the trailer, or the teaser trailer for Bambi the Reckoning. Now, if you out there in the live chat or those listening to this at the top of the week, if you have seen Winnie the Pooh, Blood and Honey, or the sequel, Winnie the Pooh, Blood and Honey 2, if you're looking forward to Bambi the Reckoning based off the teaser that we've gotten, let us know. Let us know down in the comments if you're looking forward to that or if you're looking forward to any of the other entries or even the Pooniverse itself. Bionic Bambi. Holy shit, one big deer. That was a big-ass deer. Yes, it was. Aaron Reese says, please stop calling it the Pooniverse. You get me all excited that it's just a fucking bear. Very true. It should be, I don't know. It looks interesting. The production value, I would say, looks a little bit better than Winnie the Pooh films. So maybe they're getting better, progressively better as they move along. But I guess we will find out. But that is the teaser trailer for Bambi the Reckoning. Bambi the Reckoning, which is slated for, it's expected, Halloween of this year. So October 31st, 2024. Directed by Dan Allen and stars Roxanne McKee, Samira Mighty, and Nicola Wright. I don't know. I honestly don't. Bambi transforms the innocent deer we know into a killing machine. That's all we know about it. So, I don't know. It looks interesting. Looks fascinating. I have no idea. I really don't. It should be good. Maybe. I guess we'll find out. All right. Yes, Pooniverse. Yes, a fucking bear. The Winnie the Pooniverse. Because it started with Winnie the Pooh. All right, well, let's kick this off and get started, dive into the films we've got tonight. So our first movie up tonight released April 16th, 1993, and we have Dust Devil, a South African horror film, a South African folk horror film. Let's check out this trailer. Cue up the terror tube. All right, that was the trailer for Dust Devil. which is a fascinating little film. So written and directed by disgraced director Richard Stanley, and starring Robert Burke, Chelsea Field, Zakis Mokai, and John Machikiza. The film follows a woman who left her husband, left her abusive husband, and is taking off for parts unknown in South Africa, and falls under the, I guess, is then tracked by a nefarious spirit, an evil spirit of the desert that they refer to as Dust Devils, but it actually has, I don't even want to try to pronounce the actual name, but a local Sangoma indicates, which is a local healer, indicates that this entity is a dust devil, which is a supernatural creature that can change its form. It can jump from body, from host to host, and it tracks down and draws people to it, and is drawn itself to people who want to die. And so it begins tracking this woman as in order to kill her, as it does, and it does so in order to perform these rituals in order to eventually escape from its humanly host and return back to the spirit world. So it's this cycle that they go through. And so it's a fascinating little film. And of course, obviously, as Eugene would say, shit definitely gets real in this one. It gets pretty intense. Starts off pretty intense. And I have to admit, the biggest thing about this movie is that, okay, so first, before we dive into anything about the director, okay, although there is a stuff about this. This movie came on the heels of Richard Stanley's film Hardware. And Hardware was an excellent, excellent film. If those who have not seen it, Hardware was about, came out in 1990 and was about a dystopian America. And Dermot Mulroney was a really, really excellently produced film. Really focused, really sci-fi, solid sci-fi horror. And so he followed Hardware up with this one. He returned back to his native South Africa in order to tell a folk horror about the legend of these things that exist out in, that are a part of the native folklore of Namibia. And so I found it really, really interesting. It's a very, very passionate film. There is a definite love for, you can see that Stanley had a definite love for the country of his origin and for the history of not only South Africa, but of also of Namibia and the folk tales that exist in there, that exist there, and a deep respect for them. That's the one thing I really, really enjoy about this one, is because it is profound. The storytelling, the narrative is profoundly respectful of the subject that it is tackling. The individuals who perform specific roles within these cultures are all handled with incredible respect. Someone who understands them and knows them and is familiar with them. And that's really, really good. Because too often do we have directors who will try and jump on a cultural topic or something that pertains or something that belongs to a specific, you know, minority or specific subculture, and they don't really grasp it. They get the surface intentions, but they don't really understand the nuances of it. And this one I thought was extremely well done. It's a very, very passionate film. It's very well shot. There's some excellent cinematography in here, because for all intents and purposes, I mean, for what it comes down to it, as an artist, Richard Stanley is extraordinarily talented. And in his films, he does excellent work. Now, we didn't get to see what would have happened if he'd finished Island of Dr. Moreau, because he had his nervous breakdown, and then Frankenheimer took over that one, and he got the iron fist of Frankenheimer to finish that movie. But if you look at Hardware, if you look at Dust Devil, if you look at some of his other works, the musical movie biopic that he did that came after this one, and then, of course, Color Out of Space, when he made his kind of like return after 20 years, the way he handles the camera, the way he envisions his environments, the loving approach and the respectful approach, especially to source material, I think is one of his defining qualities as a director and as a storyteller itself. Now, I would say the strength in this one lies not only in Stanley as a director, but also in his performances. Predominantly, you've got Robert Burke, who a lot of you might remember from, I think he's credited nowadays as Robert John Burke. You might remember him from RoboCop 3. He was the, after Peter Weller stopped playing RoboCop, he picked up the role. He was also in Tombstone, and he was the lead role. He was the big fat guy in Thinner. So he's been, thank you, Omni Oros Boros, appreciate that. Hey, Nemo 813, good to see you as well. So I thought Robert John Burke was excellent in this. Chelsea Field was also very, very good. Everybody that is extremely well acted. And of course, Zakis Mokai, who people will recognize, he was in the I remember him from The Serpent and the Rainbow. Yeah, he was stellar in that one. But everyone was fantastic and on point with this one. And not because it not only features the supernatural aspects of the story, but also topically what was going on post-Civil War in Namibia, when they were getting their independence, that when that country was fighting for its independence, and then it got it, and then all of a sudden the infrastructure kind of fell out, and how people were scrambling that once the occupation was over and they got, well, once that occupation was over and they got their independence, everybody was kind of left to fend for themselves, which was a horrifying situation, but enables or kind of like feeds into the supernatural aspect that these horrible things occur because once everybody is destitute and everybody's, you know, just like, you know, they have nothing because all the infrastructure left out of the country, what do they do? Destitute and dying, it attracts evil entities such as this one, which is exactly what the folklore is all about. So I loved the pacing on this one, the pacing and the editing, and everything was so strong. And I think is probably, I would actually, and a drought on top of that, because the area was suffering a 7-year drought at that time. So it's just absolutely brutal, the conditions that these people are in. And then in walks this evil spirit to do its cycle, in which it is like, you know, horrifyingly murdering, like butchering people, butchering the lost, you know, specifically targeting women, but butchering the lost and the destitute and the people who longing for death, and basically bringing that death to them. So performing that natural cycle. And it's a I honestly think, it's my personal opinion, that this film may actually be Richard Stanley's best. I thoroughly enjoyed Hardware for the sci-fi aspects to it. I love what the story he was telling there, and it's a really well-done movie, but you could tell he was very, very raw. Despite the litany of short films and the experience he had going in, your first feature film is always a test. And I thought he passed that test, but you can see that he was raw in a lot of areas. This one, he returns to his hometown, the place that he knows, the place that he loves, the people that he knows and loves and understands, and he tells a story about the, you know, that comes straight from the history of where he lived and the appreciation he had for that, and not to mention the cinematography, the fact that Africa is an absolutely beautiful country, that country, South Africa and Namibia are beautiful territory. He captures those incredibly. So this, the film has so many things going for it that it is a fucking shame that we as the audience are forced to separate the artist from the art in regards to Richard Stanley. And that really, really pisses me. That aggravates me even more. I will recommend this film all day long, but I understand that there are directors out there that are filmmakers out there that are deeply problematic, and people will not give their stuff a chance because of the behaviors of those. Now, Richard Stanley, obviously, you know, I don't think is in the realm of Polanski or you know, Victor Salva or a number of others. But I will say that the accusations of domestic abuse came out about him after Color Out of Space came out. He was in the middle of scripting the Dunwich Horror adaptation for SpectreVision. And then when those allegations came out from his longtime partner who left him, the allegations came out, and then SpectreVision dropped him, and we lost our Lovecraftian trilogy, the Lovecraft trilogy we were supposed to get, which fucking sucks. But I understand why SpectreVision made the decision, why they made that call. And this is the difficult, this is the hard part, because, and this is why I really wanted to dive into this one, because obviously we have an excellent movie that is across the board good on all points. I would say a solid 8 in virtually every single category. And then we have a director who ostensibly canceled themselves because of their personal behavior. Now, Stanley's always been a controversial filmmaker. Obviously, if you look at the relationships he's had with a number of people, not to mention the incidents that took place on Island of Dr. Moreau, he can be a problematic individual. Not only did he have the nervous breakdown on the Island of Dr. Moreau, he was summarily pretty much, you know, fired from that production because he kind of like vanished. And then he went off into like the jungle and was like, you know, living like, you know, like, oh, like a homeless person in the jungle. And then he like snuck onto the set, and it was just very, very not stable behavior. Okay. And he has exhibited that kind of emotional outburstings, you know, throughout his career. And then we come to find out, while there were no problems on the set of Color Out of Space, then, of course, the accusations come out from the person who was his kind of like longtime filmmaking partner and kind of personal partner, that they were, that it was an abusive relationship. And then that's when he got dropped. Now, that's the hard thing to talk about. Now, on this podcast, I never wanted to be the kind of show that shied away from good movies because the directors were pieces of shit. I never wanted to do that, but I understand that it is very, very hard to do that because it's difficult to separate the art from the artist. And I would say, when it comes down to making a decision, the decision is each the individual's. I think that the art should be taken on its merits for the art in itself alone. Yes, Travis Brown, like Victor Salva and Jeepers Creepers. So, or if you're talking about like Rosemary's Baby and Roman Polanski, because Polanski had his shit as well. You know, there's a number of directors out there who have, you know, who are not good people. They're not. They're just, you know, just as a person, they're not great. Okay. The work they do can be stellar. Okay. But it doesn't erase the fact that they're not good people. But the fact they're not good people doesn't erase the fact that their movies are good. And sometimes even, you know, revolutionary, they're, you know, adding things to the genre or even creating new subgenres in and of themselves or creating new franchises. That's the killer, you know, that's the kicker, because we have to balance what we as the horror community, as those who enjoy the films, you know, what we like being brought to the, being brought to the table. We have to balance the positivity of what, of the new content we're getting with the people who are bringing it. And does it do the horror community a disservice? Or the filmmakers, does it do future filmmakers, does it do us a disservice to simply cut those out because of who made them? And I know everybody's got a different opinion on this one. It is a hard discussion to have because everybody's got their positions on this. Even to the point like, what can we forgive and what can we not forgive? You know? We saw the, hey, Gavin's Raper, good to see you. And yes, Travis Brown, Michael Bay is not a good person. Kubrick was also kind of a dick, you know? The fact that we could say that Kubrick emotionally abused Shelley Duvall on the set of The Shining, that was emotionally abusive behavior, psychologically abusive behavior, does that mean that we cut The Shining out of everything and give it no consideration because Kubrick was a dick? Or do we balance that with the fact that, well, he gave us 2001 A Space Odyssey, he gave us, you know, Barry Lyndon, he gave us all these other films that are like these other phenomenal fucking films, and so we forgive that? Like, where do we draw the line? And that's the thing, is that each individual has to draw the line themselves. They do. Yes, sarcasm. Sometimes the backlot stories are more horrifying than the films being made there. Absolutely. So that's Rave Darkster says, like, I can't stand Christian Slater, the person, but like his movies. Christian Slater, obviously there are tales to be told there of the person. But as far as like, you know, like there's a reason he got not, he was, I think he won the Emmy for his work. I think he won the Emmy for his work in Mr. Robot because Christian Slater is fucking talented as shit. He really is. But, you know, what do we do? Separate, yes, wrote in the last name, you're correct. Separating the art from the artist is always difficult and is always something that the individual has to do. That the individual, it's a decision that the individual has to make for themselves. I myself can separate the two of them. I myself can completely, you know, can completely write off Victor Salva for the things that he did. You know, for his actions and who he is and, you know, and what those issues are. But I can still enjoy Jeepers Creepers because the monster is excellent. The story is good. Justin Long and Gina Phillips were great in it. So I think the psychic chick, Janelle, I can't remember her last name. But everybody was great in that. That was a good movie. The first one was a good movie. But we can separate those. Travis Brown says, I heard William Friedkin was a nightmare during the Exorcist filming, which is entirely possible. So that's the difficulty in that, you know, and I love this movie. I really do. Dust Devil is fantastic. It has a fantastic story. It does. I mean, that is not riddled with plot holes. It flows beautifully from point to point. It doesn't waste time on exposition. It showcases what is legitimately going, what was legitimately going on at the time in Namibia, and the struggles that the country was having, that the people were having at that time, and of course, you know, the underlying effects of the outlying effects of apartheid. You know, how white people were viewed by blacks during that time period. So, Patricia Belcher, thank you, Patricia Belcher. So the shit that was happening there is all, it all flows together beautifully. And Richard Stanley wove a wonderful story. As a matter of fact, likely the reason the film was so good is because the film itself was based on a short film that he did like 16 years prior. He'd done a short film about this, pretty much centered around the same topic, and then finally was able to go back and actually make it into a feature film. So he was familiar with it. He'd known it for years. He'd been wanting to do it for a long time, and he finally got the opportunity to do it because of the success of Hardware, which was like straight up. I mean, that was the amount of money that thing made for the time and how much was spent was phenomenal. And he said, brings up even Roman Polanski. See, that's the thing. Roman Polanski, obviously, I won't disagree. A piece of shit. For what he did, for what he's done. I agree with the half of Hollywood that demands that people stop propping that man up. You know, stop propping him up. I agree with that. But the films he gave us while he was working, I'm not going to sit here and shit on Rosemary's Baby, because that was a phenomenal film that fundamentally altered the landscape for not only horror films, but also feminist horror films at the time that came out. You know, that movie was instrumental. There are movies that exist today that would not exist if it weren't for Rosemary's Baby. That, I mean, the very idea, we could say that the formation of the final girl trope, the formation of the final girl, the psychology of the final girl took a long time to get situated. And so you have benchmarks. You have like, you know, Peeping Tom. You've got Peeping Tom. You've got Psycho. You've got Texas Chainsaw Massacre, Halloween. You know, all the movies leading up. Not to mention that, but also Black Christmas. You got a number of films leading up to establishing the final girl. But there were also movies that established the feminism of the final girl. And there were necessary movies that came along that helped to establish that psychology. What Mia Farrow did not do in that movie, okay, are the things that final girls today do. And that would have been solidified into the horror zeitgeist if it weren't for Roman Polanski's work. Like I said, there are stories that we have today that don't exist, that would not have existed if that movie had not been there to springboard further ideas from. Fundamentally changing the landscape of feminist horror. That's the thing. It's like, how do we separate those two? Yes, he's a piece of shit. Yes, the movie was fundamentally important, you know, for the future, for going forward, for the future of the horror genre. So that's the hard part. So it is a difficult discussion, a very hard discussion. Sarcasm says, this week's tangent brought to you by Misogynistic Bastards. Yes, Misogynistic Bastards. So that's kind of like, that really is something I think I'm losing my words here. This is something that warrants further discussion. I think warrants further discussion other than just me here ranting about it. I think this is a discussion that really should be bounced back and forth between other people in the industry. Josh Lee says, there are many mediums that suffer from a director-creator basically canceling themselves. There are several great anime film series that are shat upon due to this. Exactly. Film is not the only one. Anime does as well. Music does as well. So writing as well, okay? And even in just literary. So I think Philip K. Dick is one example of this. So probably one of the greatest sci-fi authors ever. And he's a titanic asshole. What are you going to do? So, I mean, it's where you draw the line. So Aaron Reese says, no one person makes a movie, even the director. If we write off a movie entirely, we write off the creative work of the victims as well. Agreed. So like if we write off, like with Polanski, if we write off Rosemary's Baby, we write off the work of Mia Farrow, who was phenomenal in that movie. If we write off Dust Devil, then we write off, you know, the work of Robert John Burke of Chelsea Field. If we write off, then we write off the work, you know, going forward all the way, we write off the work of Nicolas Cage and Jolie Richardson. Everybody was involved in Color Out of Space. And that wasn't just Richard Stanley that made Color Out of Space amazing. There's a whole fucking team, all the minds at Spectrevision that helped to make that thing happen, which includes Elijah Wood. Because Elijah Wood is one of the founding members of Spectrevision. So, you know, where do we draw the line there? And that's something that I think everybody has to, you know, make up their minds themselves. But your thoughts on this. Now, I have something I want to ask the audience. I know that it's a difficult discussion. I don't want to say hard again, because although I just did, because Omni Oros Boros, you know, is pointing that out to me. Everything is hard for me tonight. But the thing I want to point out, hey, Cindy Sue, good to see you, is that the conversation, this is worthy of conversation, topic worthy of conversation. So in the comments below, your thoughts on separating the artist from the art. Okay, just like Sarcasm brings up, Ronnie Radke is a piece of shit person, but I love the music from Falling in Reverse. I guess I'm the rare creature that can separate art from the artist. Like I said, it's difficult for some people to do, especially those individuals who themselves have been victimized similarly to what the artist has victimized other people. When you can identify to that degree, that's what's that's where it becomes really, really difficult and completely understandable. It's completely valid. So these individuals have valid arguments and they have a voice that deserves to be heard in regards to that. So your thoughts on this. I'd very much like to hear what people think about this down in the comments below. But the question that I have for the audience tonight regarding the South African horror film Dust Devil, I love the fact that it was an international production. I love the actors that were in it. The performances were top notch. The cinematography was great. And I loved that despite at some points it had the kind of dreamlike, the unfocused dreamlike quality that Richard Stanley is kind of known for, those little moments, those languid moments. But I love passionate filmmaking. I really do. The question is, does Dust Devil deserve a remake? Could this film be remade? You know, given, you know, what was necessary, the necessary elements, that the necessary elements don't really exist today as they existed back in the early 90s. So I'm curious. Let me know down in the comments below as well. Do you think this film is deserving of a remake? Could it be remade? Or no? Is this one of those little gems from the 90s that deserves to kind of remain where it is, where people can go back and check that out? You know, people can go in and just, you know, go back and revisit that as kind of a hallmark, an excellent film from a young director who was just, you know, just breaking out, you know, before things turned to shit in his life. You know, before he turned his life to shit. Let me clarify that. Before he made decisions to turn his life to shit, you know, or maybe he was a piece of shit then too. Although I didn't read anything about it. I heard it pretty much that the shittiness started around Island of Dr. Moreau, because Island of Dr. Moreau was apparently the straw that broke the camel's back for Richard Stanley. That's where pretty much he went fucking insane. So, all right. So let me know down in the comments below. Is Dust Devil deserving of a remake? Yes, no, leave it alone. Very curious. Let me know your thoughts. And of course, if you have any thoughts on the difficulty of separating the art from the artist, I think that's an important conversation to have. I'd love to hear what you all think about that. WeCanHorror@gmail.com or down in the comments below. It's a tough conversation. Tough conversation. Sir Kaz says, I don't think it warrants a remake. It's a good enough standalone, and anyone redoing it would likely miss the political subtext. Agreed. I would agree with that. I would. And John Monahan says, don't let Rob Zombie do it. I don't know how much Rob Zombie is going to be doing anymore after The Munsters. I really don't. That may have been, he may have canceled his career on that one, because, wow. Woof. I love you, Rob. Devil's Rejects, best movie ever made. I enjoyed the Halloween films, especially the second one for what we were trying to do. Three from Hell was pretty much just Devil's Rejects 2.0, but you know, I can't fault you for that. There's really not much storytelling there, especially after Sid Haig passed away, so what more can you do? But The Munsters? Really? I enjoyed 31. I like Lords of Salem, you know? I like the movies he made, but man, Munsters? Fuck, dude. Really? Ah. And the sad part is, I wish I could shit on the fact that Sherry was the mother. Oh, what the hell? Oh, wow. That's how bad that movie was. Lily. Shit. That Sherry was cast as Lily. I wish I could dump on that as being the worst part, but that's not the worst part of the film. It wasn't. Shockingly, it was not the worst part of the movie. It was one of the bad parts. The whole movie was bad across the board. So, Audio Sports says, jail like the Munsters, but can't admit to it. No, I absolutely did not. I absolutely did not. Don't you put that evil on me, Omni. Aaron Reese says, Rob Zombie's not so bad as long as you predict what they advertise the movie as. As long as you expect what they advertise the movie as. Halloween is a great portrayal of child psychosis, but never should have been attached to the shape. Oh, I agree with that. Travis Moon says, Sherry Moon acted more like Elvira than Lily. I would also agree with that. Actually, I think she was kind of all over the place. I think because she never was able to solidify who her character was. Was she trying to be Elvira? Like a more modernized version of Lily? Was she trying to be a Lily, but mixed up, but bounced between the two? Was she unfocused, able to do that? Was, you know, can she not get baby out of her head? I honestly don't know. I don't know. But not great. He's only as good as the trailer. John Wanya, that's funny. Thank you so much, Left-Handed Jedi, for gifting 10 memberships to the Army of the Dead. Appreciate that. Welcome, Wraith Knight, Ted Dowell, Jason Hyatt, Armageddon's Fire, Autistic Shill, Colon, Tony Regime, Farted a Reaper, Zeta, Zaku, Man, and Man, Man, to the Army of the Dead. Please enjoy the new emojis and, of course, the channel badges. Hope you all dig that. Appreciate that. Thank you very much. All right. So let's move on to our second film. And, man, I was really hoping Eugene would be here for this one. Because this one, this one's fascinating. Because we have a legitimate horror film mystery here. A legitimate mystery. Because I have no trailer for this film. I have not seen this film. And as a matter of fact, I'll put money down that none of you out there have seen this film. Okay, but we're still going to talk about it. Because what we're going to talk about, I think, is worth talking about. So, the movie that we're talking about tonight, that I had scheduled to talk about this, and I spent an inordinate amount of time trying to hunt down, but that's part of the story, came out April 17th, 2008. We have the movie Mind Morgue. Now, all that I can find about this movie is the poster, Mind Morgue, directed by Mark Daniel Foley and Mark Dubay, written by Mark Daniel Foley and Michael O'Connor, starring Christine Alanach, Kat Bartlett, Ashley Bates, Moses Beckett, Paul Braccafort, and Alexandra Briskey. So, oh, holy shit. Real Russell Coker says, I'm here for Corona Zombies. Good to see you, Russell. I hope you're doing well. Thanks so much for popping in tonight. He says, I'm here for Corona Zombies. We're going to get there because I got some shit to say about that movie. So, but good to see you, bud. Thanks so much for hanging out. Yes. Sarcasm said, I couldn't find it either, and I dove deep into the black corners of the internet. I did as well. I hunted for this bad boy. You know, I went so far to try and find this fucking movie. I could not do it, but we'll get into this. Now, Mind Morgue. What is the movie about? So the movie is about a writer, a horror writer named Robert Maxwell. Robert Maxwell, who's been a horror writer for more than 30 years, is prepared to write his final book. Possessed by an invasion of disturbing images, he struggles to regain control of his decaying mind, embarking on a journey to quell the endless pain. He finds himself sharing his torture with everyone he meets. Leaving behind a trail of blood and death, Robert emerges as a beacon of horror. His cryptic words reveal the ill-fated destination of one man's tragic existence. So, that is what we have. That's essentially the plot summary of Mind Morgue. Now, the fucked up thing is that no matter where I looked, I could not find this movie. I could not find a trailer for this film. I could not find a review of this film from anyone who had actually seen it. So I have no data on this movie. Well, I have a little bit. And it's not so much about the film itself. It's about what went on behind the film. So, to give some context, the film was shot back in the mid-2000s. So it's one of those films that Eugene really, really loves. The ones that are that they're shot back in, you know, the, you know, when digital became the thing and people could shoot monies for shoot movies for cheap. The film is, I would say, from all reports, borders on sexploitation, but is not really sexploitation. There's not enough extreme in there to be sexploitative. So it's really more just a horror film with a bunch of titties in it. It's pretty, with graphic gore and violence and gore and a bunch of titties in it. It's pretty much what it is, from what I understand. Now, shot by Mark Foley and now the films were shot under pseudonyms. The names that I gave you are not the names of the filmmakers. The actual filmmakers behind this are Mark Foley and Aaron Vanuck. Mark Foley and Aaron Vanuck, at the time that they shot this, they formed a production company. They formed a production company called, make sure I get this right, Moongoyle. So they formed a production company called Moongoyle. Their website was at moongoyle.com. It is now currently defunct. And they wanted to specialize in horror films with hot chicks. That's pretty much what they wanted to do. So we gotta be along the lines of probably they wanted to kind of like go into sexploitation, but not extreme sexploitation. But they wanted to have, you know, TNA. You know, it's violence, it's gore, it's TNA, it's horror. It's, you know, it's literally the breadbasket of the horror genre. You know, they wanted to go in and they wanted to shoot independent films. Good for them. They actually got a bunch. They actually got several under their belt. The Uncoded, Mind Morgue, The Limb Collector, The Demon of Castleberry. They got some films under their belt. So they were becoming successful. They'd managed to pull this off. These two guys from Connecticut managed to put this thing together, formulate a film, put together a film production company, and start punching out independent horror films. It's what we all who are in this industry want to do. Unfortunately, that all came to a crashing fucking end. Now, this is where we jump into it. That where things like what we do in our personal lives can come back and bite us. Because what happened to Foley and Vanuck, I don't think should happen to anybody, but it did happen to them. And this will lead into exactly why I was not able to get a hold of this movie. Now, Mark and Aaron both worked for the education. We're working in education. Mark was a middle school principal in Granby, Connecticut, and Aaron was a guidance counselor at a middle school in Windsor. So they both worked in education, and that's likely how the two of them met. Being a part of the Connecticut Independent School District, they're part of CISD. They knew each other. They were both horror fans. They wanted to come together and make movies. They made them under pseudonyms in order to avoid any kind of connection. In their words, to quote them, they did not want to draw unnecessary attention or distraction to the educators' field by making horror films, which makes sense. They're basically trying to keep the two of them separate. It's fucked up. Because a lot of people said, a lot of the media reported, and this is all right-wing shit. Every news article I found about this was all from deeply conservative spaces that said they did it under pseudonyms in order to protect, because they knew it was wrong to do. So they used pseudonyms because they didn't want to attach their real names because they knew what they were doing was wrong as educators. That's not the case. They did not want to create undue distractions by being the horror filmmakers who are also educators. They wanted to keep them separate, which makes sense. Trying to juggle them both would be a pain in the, both together would be a pain in the padded ass. Nonetheless, the films came out and it was discovered, and as reported by Hartford News, pretty much every single outlet in Connecticut, it made the Daily Mail, it made the Guardian, made a bunch of places. middle school principal, and of course the guidance counselor, both of them were forced to resign from their positions after outrage from the parents groups or whatever, from the parents of students, after outrage over the fact that they said that they were producing erotic horror films and running an erotic website. So the community, the conservative community, hearing about these horror movies, checking out moongoyle.com, which had, you know, hot chicks with blood and makeup effects all over them on their website, construed that as these guys basically tried to run the prawn argument in regards to sexploitation and use that to run these two guys not only out of their careers, but from what I understand, out of their homes. And that they both still live in Connecticut, but they both since moved. So not only ran them out of their careers, but ran them out of their community, out of their homes, go somewhere else. And this all happened, this all took place roughly about 15, 16 years ago. So Mark and Aaron had to pretty much throw their hands up on the thing they love to do, which was, you know, he was a middle school principal. Aaron was a guidance counselor, you know, doing their part in the education system. And they were forced to not do that anymore. They were forced to leave because they're also fans of horror films and they wanted to make horror movies that entertain people. That's pretty, that's what happened there. Now, so apparently this was up in Granby and Windsor. Granby and Windsor. So, obviously, this is really, really fucked up. Now, I know a lot of us, this is the first time I did not know this story. I did not know that this had taken place. Unfortunately, John Monahan, Mind Morgue is not on Plex. We've looked. It is literally nowhere. But there's a reason for that. There's a reason for that. After this all went down, and even Mark's wife penned an open letter, basically describing, like, you know, like trying to, maybe it was a bad move on her part, maybe, but she was doing what she thought was right. She penned an open letter to, I believe it was the Hartford News, to the Hartford media, and basically telling them that, one, these films are not prawn. They're not pornographic in that respect. These films are horror films, and yes, while there is some nudity in them, which is often to be expected in a horror movie, they are not gratuitous, and it is not to the point of being lurid, okay? So they are what you would expect in horror movies, that she herself had seen the films, okay, and assisted in their production in some ways, not as an actor, but, you know, behind the scenes, and had no problem with what was being conveyed there, likely because she was a horror fan as well, and she understands the genre, but that did no good. In the aftermath of this, Moongoyle.com was shut down. They shuttered Moongoyle.com. They deleted their social media accounts. They privated every single, like, I think all but one video on their YouTube. I don't even know if the YouTube, the Moongoyle YouTube that I found, I don't even know if it's theirs. But there's only one video on it, and it's from years ago, and there's nothing else on it. But it says they privated all the videos on their YouTube channel, so nothing there. They scrubbed themselves from social media and they, in essence, kind of disappeared. Their horror dreams up in smoke. Now, from what I understand, Mark has worked a little bit more in film, but he's been working on, with other production companies, on children's entertainment, like doing kids stuff. Aaron Vanuck, no idea. Can't find anything on him. They have no idea what he's doing or if he even decided to continue on in filmmaking. But Mark has done a little bit. So, finding out all of this about Mind Morgue, I went ahead and I started trying to dive into try and find this movie because the more I read about it, the more I wanted to see it. I want to see this movie. I really fucking do. As, you know, not only because now I'm intrigued by the premise, I'm intrigued by the backstory, but also because what happened to these two filmmakers, and not just to them, but to everybody involved in the movie. But what happened to these two guys to be vilified for their love of horror is beyond the fucking pale to me. It's unfathomable that in the mid-2000s, you could think of this as like happening in the 70s, the 60s, the 70s, maybe even the 80s in some really conservative places, like if you're like here in Oklahoma or like in Kansas. But in Connecticut, where it's really more about money than it is about anything else, these cats make movies that make money. We know because they were able to make many movies. And then turn around and be vilified out of not only what they love, but also their fucking careers and education because the media jumped on it and painted them as essentially educators who made, you know, Prawn. They connected the sex to the fact that they're working in the school system in order to paint them as these characters, as these, you know, individuals that were then basically run out of their communities on a rail, which is fucking bullshit. It's just straight up bullshit. And the fact that this happened in 2008 just kind of blows my goddamn mind. Nonetheless, I was able to track down a friend of Mark's, and I got in touch with him. He was an executive producer on Mindmorgue. And very friendly guy named Aaron, really, really good dude. You know, answer my email. Yeah, we had a great back and forth. And from what I understand, from what I gather, this whole scenario obviously is a very, very sore point for Mark. And he doesn't like talking about it, which I can understand. Even 15, 16 years later, I get it. I completely get it. And if he doesn't ever want to talk about it again, that's his choice. If he doesn't ever want to show any of his movies ever again, including Mindmorgue, I get it. If there are, in fact, no copies of this film left anywhere, I understand it. My only hope is that is not the case. I truly hope that is not the case. Because any edition of any film that the filmmakers managed to get in the can is something that deserves to be brought to the table. I don't care about the quality. I honestly don't. I want budding filmmakers to be successful. I want them to have the tools necessary to be successful. I don't want everybody who wants to make movies to have to fork over hundreds of thousands of dollars just to try and do what they love. If I can impart some knowledge from what my experiences are, if Eugene can, if Aaron can, if Johnny can, if Aaron can, if we can impart what we've learned to anybody else out there who wants to make movies for free and help them make decisions, all the better. That's part of why we wanted to do this show. Not just doing reviews, but of actually talking about this shit, you know, talking about this industry, about this genre, about the things that we love, about how to make these movies, how they do them, how you can do them. And to see an independent filmmaker get completely rousted, I think deserves the entire horror community rallying around them. The fucked up thing is I don't know why that didn't happen. Or if it did happen, why it didn't have the effect that it should have had. Maybe it wasn't enough. I honestly don't know. But I do know that there are two talented filmmakers out there who got their shot, who were making the most of their opportunities, and then turned around and didn't get to do it anymore and got rousted by the community. Fuck their community. Fuck those individuals who ran those bullshit goddamn media stories about these two individuals and tried to paint them as monsters who were around their children, which is bullshit. It's bullshit fucking lies. That's what it is. I found a couple of people. It was one individual who talked about this over at movieocrity.com. This is a good dude who basically was running down making the same points that I'm making, you know, that I found this after I kind of like ran down on this. And he goes even further. He goes into other stuff like how, you know, To Kill a Mockingbird, Catcher in the Rye, shit like that. How those materials resulted in their authors and the authors being vilified. You know, it's along the same shit, but, you know, it's basically, it's not new, but fuck, man. Like, it's something that shouldn't happen. It really shouldn't. So I will say this. I honestly think that this should not be the end of their story. I don't think that Mark and Aaron deserve to have their filmmaking stories in here. Now, obviously, Mark is still working. I don't know if Aaron is. Maybe Aaron is. Maybe they are still working. They're just keeping it, you know, really on the low. They're just keeping it really on the low. Maybe. I have no idea. But they're horror filmmakers. That's what their first love was. That's what they were good at. And I would like to see them make more someday. I would. As a matter of fact, I really want to fucking see Mind Morgue. I really do. I want to see this movie, and I want to see their other films as well. You know, maybe one day we will. And, you know, maybe there's a copy out there somewhere. Maybe it's on their YouTube. I have no idea. But it's a goddamn shame. So the question that I have for the audience, though, the one thing that I want to ask y'all, given this whole scenario, this whole fucked up scenario in which art can, in some circumstances, negatively impact one's life. The art one makes can negatively impact one's life, completely beyond their control. Nothing they did, but just the world doesn't fucking understand, or the community or whatever just doesn't fucking understand it, or doesn't even want to understand it. Or they have this preconception in their minds about what it is, and then they completely write their own fucking missives about the context, and they ultimately end up destroying lives because they've done it. You know? Given that, given the pain of this event on Mark and Aaron and everyone else involved in this film, given all this, and ultimately it is up to Mark and Aaron if they want to do this, but has it been enough time? Have their films earned a re-release? Do you think now, 2024, that there is a place for Mark and Aaron at the table? As a matter of fact, let me rephrase that. Are Mark and Aaron's places at the table still waiting for them? Because I think they are. I think they are. I think that these gentlemen, these filmmakers established themselves, did what they loved, put it on film, got it in the can, and ran with it, and did it multiple times successfully. I, for one, think that the horror community can be open and inviting to these individuals to let them know that they do have that this is a safe community to operate in. Fuck what the naysayers say. Fuck with those assholes out there who don't understand what they do. This is where the art, this is where the community that enjoys the art supports the artist. This is where we stand up and we back up those individuals who are unfairly vilified and ensure that they know how much we love them for their efforts and how much we love their efforts just because they put them out there. That takes balls. That takes serious guts to put something on film and fucking put it out there. You never know how people are going to take it. And sometimes shit like this happens where the community turns against you. And sometimes I think the horror community in of itself, which often in my opinion falls prey to its own kind of insular nature, you know, doesn't really put itself out there like it should at times, you know, as vocal as it can be, that this was an opportunity to rally the wagon, to circle the wagons and rally around two filmmakers who got the fucking short end of the goddamn stick. They deserved better. They deserve better. And I, for one, think that we should be here for them. I, for one, think that Mind Morgue and all the films under the Moon Goyle production, the Moon Goyle banner, I think they deserve a re-release. I think we should see them again. We should put them out there. And these boys should be given the opportunity that they deserve to make more movies, independent or otherwise. We should make that. That should be something that happens. Now, will anything come from this episode? I have no idea. I really don't. But that being said, I want to know your thoughts on that. Let me know down in the description. I know this was a bit of a heady topic, you know? This is that, like, the first two films here are kind of fucking heavy, you know? The vilification of artists, undue or deserved, you know? But nonetheless, let us know down in the comments below or at weekendhorror@gmail.com your thoughts on this side of the coin. the vilification of, or the undue vilification of artists for their art, you know, for just daring to produce what they produced, for daring to put themselves out there, you know? You know, I love that sarcasm. A Moon Goyle collection, a collection of all their movies, a box set. I'd buy that. I would buy that. $99.99. I'll fucking buy that in a heartbeat. I'll set that right here on my fucking desk. Absolutely. You know? And this is interesting. Cindy Sue brings up TerrorCon is in September in Marlborough, Massachusetts. Maybe a writing campaign or a call can happen. Possibly. Like I said, I myself, as kind of like, you know, kind of like the journalist that I am, I didn't want to push too hard. I really didn't. I don't know how deeply sensitive the whole scenario is. I really don't. But I think it does deserve to be talked about. It deserves more than the parting glance that horror journalism gave it back in the mid-2000s. You know, I think it deserves more than that. I believe it's a topic that deserves to be discussed. And I believe that Mark and Aaron should never have lost their places at the table or been forced to walk away for the sake of their livelihoods. That's bullshit. And I think that, and I hope that they know that. I hope that they know that. I hope that they know that we believe that and that we support them in their endeavors. So let us know your thoughts down in the comments below. Should we see a re-release of the Moon Goyle collection of the films that these gentlemen produced? Absolutely, we should. We should see that. We absolutely should. So, but your thoughts on this whole situation, down in the comments below, love to hear what you guys think. And I hope that one day they do know that how much that we respect them, how much that we support them, and that their movies are important and have a place at the table. They really do. They brought them. And we should have always been willing to, we should have always been accepting them. And the minute the community turned against them, we should have come out in droves. People should have come out in droves. The problem is, likely people didn't know about it. I think that's what it was. It got local coverage, a little bit of international coverage, but it wasn't something that was huge, you know? But hey, here's our opportunity. Here's our opportunity to let them know how much we support them, how much we appreciate them, and how much we love them for their efforts, how much we hate what happened to them, and that at this point, we think that they deserve to have their stuff shown. You know? Fuck the haters. Fuck them. So that was the big thing on Mind Morgue. You know? Really, really interesting, really fascinating stuff. Fascinating story there. And I really hope we see more from them. If there are future developments on that, I will definitely let y'all know as long as I can. You know, if I ever get an opportunity to talk with Mark, I think that would be a fascinating conversation, and I would love to get his thoughts on the whole situation. So, but we'll find out. You know, I take this story and I leave it in the capable hands of the horror community. I leave it with y'all, and I will do my part as well, but I leave it with all of you as well. I'd love to do that, Cindy. I really, really would. Says Aaron Vanuck is still in Brantford, Connecticut. I'll send you the file. Oh, cool. I would love to invite Aaron and Mark on. I really, really would. I absolutely, that would be a fascinating conversation. It really would. And I hope to see their movies one day. I really want to watch their movies. And I will buy a box set. If they release a box set of their best, I'll buy it. Right then and there. I will. I'll be on the pre-order list. All right. Okay. Mark Foley, I believe is his name. Mark Foley. Mark Foley and Aaron Vanuck. Interesting stuff. And a mystery. Real mystery. A mystery of a film. I love a good horror mystery. And this is definitely one of those. All right. Let's jump on to our next one. So, our third film tonight. Fuck me running. This is, woof. But there's a reason that we're talking about this one. So, released April 19th, 2011, we have the horror film Hyenas. Let's check out this trailer. Cue up the terror tube, because I need a break, because I have talked way too much. Oh, yeah, the straight-to-DVD Hyenas. Damn. So, written and directed by Eric Weston, and starring Maria Bertrand, I hate to say this, Misach Taylor, Dewan Johnson, John Seminara, Jim Morris, Ron Bard, Tinpo Lee, Rudolph Martin, Reginald James, and Costas Mandalore. Two big names there. Oh yeah, and I have to say Mike Rad. Mike Rad is a character actor who's been in a ton of stuff, been in like small things here and there. But Mike Rad, you've seen him in I think the man has like over 100 credits to his name, but he's been in a ton of shit. But nonetheless, the film follows a roving clan of shape-shifting human hyena creatures who run around hunting for human prey. And they are hunted by a pair of individuals. Crazy Briggs, played by Misach Taylor, and Costas Mandalore, who is avenging the death of his wife and his baby. Shit never really gets real in this one. It's, yeah, where hyenas. It's, this film is fucking bad. This film is so bad. It's not even laughably bad. I mean, I'm not even 100% sure where to fucking start on this particular one, because the writing is shit. This has got to be Eric Weston's worst writing ever. You know, yes, rest in peace, Misach Taylor of Double Double Toil and Trouble and the Mannequin films, and not to mention Designing Women, which he was an Emmy nominated or Emmy winning performance for that one. He was amazing in Designing Women. He's amazing in everything that he did, except for this, which is a shame. But I'm glad that this is not the last thing in his filmography. The last thing in his filmography was a two episode arc he did for Criminal Minds, and that was great. That was fantastic stuff. But this movie was terrible. The writing is some of Eric Weston's worst ever. The characters are terrible. Nobody is taking this thing seriously, except maybe Taylor. Maybe he took it seriously. But he took it seriously like Danny Trejo takes film seriously these days, where he's really more about driving the plot and providing exposition where it's necessary. I would actually say that Neil Rodent, I would say that Neil Breen's films are actually better than this one. This one falls down into like the Butcher category. The writing is awful. The acting is awful across the board, except for maybe Taylor, who takes it with that kind of like that hokey kind of Danny Trejo providing exposition kind of thing. But this is where he kind of fell into that category. Well, we're never going to say that Danny Trejo is awful, but he's not doing his Danny Trejo best. You know, that's the key, you know. And then, of course, Costas Mandalore just phoning the shit in across the board. Nothing serious there. The CGI is fucking atrocious. The serious lack of practical effects. The editing is awful. We always cut away from what should ostensibly be seen, linger way too much on shit that is not important. The twists and turns were telegraphed. Obviously, the chick he picks up and then he has sex with, obviously, she's bad. She's a villain. That's telegraphed in the version. Not to mention, her fucking acting was, I believe that was fucking, what the hell was her name? Man, I can't remember her name now. What the hell was her name? What the shit? Amanda Aardsma. Amanda Aardsma is absolutely awful. It was the most plastic and terrible line readings I've ever read. Yeah, I think I've heard in a long, long time. There was nothing worked at all. It was likely, from my opinion, not to mention the cinematography, the filmmaking itself was just a late, not to mention the sheriff himself, like the sheriff who's in charge of the investigation, him actually being a hyena as well, because he's helping to cover all the shit up, is just, it's all telegraphed. It's all obvious. You see it all coming a mile away. And it has to be an example of the laziest fucking filmmaking I've seen in a long, long time. Like I said, this is Butcher level. And even some areas too dark. There's not even titties in this. All the scenes you saw of girls like taking out their tops like this, they're all shadowed out. So nobody shows any titties in this. There's nothing. And the gore is minimal. If it's not CGI, it's just really badly done practical effects. And they're cheap. It's like there was no money in this. No money at all. So nothing went to what it was supposed to be. And I think pretty much they wasted whatever budget they had on the very, very terrible practical very, very terrible CGI effects. And the blending from the CGI into the practical is absolutely terrible. Is just, it's like just bad overlays. Just really, really terrible shit. I'm not sure how this movie got made. And this sucks. This overall sucks. because Eric Weston is not a bad writer and director. I mean, he gave us one of my favorites, his very, very first film, fucking Evil Speak. We talked about his work in Evil Speak, and Evil Speak was amazing. That was great. He directed Evil Speak. That was fucking fantastic. You know, Evil Speak was good, and he had other films. Hitters was good, Protect and Serve, The Iron Triangle. He did some war films there, did some drama and thriller stuff, but the, you know, the two horror films he's done, Evil Speak, awesome, but that was back in 1981. And then he did Hyenas, 2011. I think that's just where, well, I guess he got saddled with that shit. I don't fucking know. This thing isn't even worth the 2.8 that they give it on IMDb. You know? And it's fucked up because it's an interesting, because given the exposition that, because the, and not to mention the way the film is laid out, because they'll have like these moments and then it'll cut to Misach Taylor waxing philosophically around this campfire holding a gun where he's telling the story about the, you know, how this thing all started, and, you know, and doing this fucking, and then it'll cut to action and cut back to him. And we realize at the end that the whole fucking movie is being told in retrospect, and that now he has a new team of the survivors from this incident, and they've joined him to hunt down these things. They're going to Los Angeles to hunt down the survivors, the ones that got away. So Angel Rivera says, I think JL is holding back his disgust and not telling us how he really feels about this movie. This movie is fucking horrible. It's like I said, it's not even laughably bad. It's not even unintentionally funny. It's not just boring. It's also terribly made, you know? And I don't know. And I'm almost ashamed to have to talk about this one. I really am. I'm almost ashamed to have it. It is an insulting failure, is what it is. Insulting also to the talent of Costas Mandalore and to Misach Taylor, that this is on his filmography. You know, it's like, it may just be a contender for one of the worst films ever made. I kind of wanted to hear what Eugene thought about it, because I was going to ask him if he thought that this was worse than The Butcher. Because it just might be. Because at least The Butcher had some decent acting moments in this. There were no moments that were good in this film. Every moment was flat. Every moment was affectless. Every moment was phoned in. And like the gang shit with the what was that about? Unnecessary. They used this whole fucking shit, and it was the dialogue there was beyond awful. You know, like it was almost like Weston went online and looked up like pop culture gang, you know, buzzwords, and used those to formulate the conflict between the two street gangs, which is like, lazy writing, terrible acting, terrible cinematography. I mean, just across the board. So, given all this, yeah, my sarcasm says, Michael Foley and Aaron Vanuk get shit on for halfway decent indie flicks, but this piece of shit gets $3.99 a pop on Prime. There is truly no justice in this world. Zero justice. Zero whatsoever. And yet someone still gave him a budget. Find that poor sap and start milking him ASAP. Yeah, I'll try. I really will. Just the only thing that I have to add, I mean, if you avoided this film, good on you. If you watched it, just to, you know, say that you watched it, now you have that under your belt, you know? The bar is constantly changing for what is the worst. The question that I have for the audience, the question that I have for all of you, is what do you think was the worst part of this film? There are so many bad things here. The question is, what was the worst? You could say a totally viable answer is that they were all equally bad. But me personally, it's the writing. The writing is the worst. The script in this was so fucking terrible that nothing could overcome this. Nothing at all. And I have no idea how Misach Taylor was able to keep a smile on his face while saying some of the lines that he had to say. But hey, it's a paycheck, man. What are you going to do? But yeah, I'm very curious. Let me know down in the comments below or weekendhorror@gmail.com what you think was the absolute worst part of this film. Writing, directing, cinematography, editing, pacing, lighting, sound, acting. I want to know. The fact that it was fucking made at all. let me know about that. You know, the fact that money, actual budget, went to making this piece of shit. Let me know. And I fucking hate it. I hate it because I'm dogging on a filmmaker. I'm dogging on a film from a filmmaker that I respect and I enjoy. I loved Evil Speak. We all loved Evil Speak. Clint Howard was fucking genius in that. That movie was fantastic. Not only did it, because it pushed the boundaries in the 70s or in the 80s. That was pushing the envelope. Fucking Richard Mall as the brutal Satanist. Clint Howard as the protagonist. Inspired casting. Great writing. Fantastic plot. You're blending sci-fi elements with fucking horror elements, you know, touching on the satanic panic that was affecting the nation at the time, you know, all that shit. And not to mention a phenomenal third act of Clint Howard, like, oh, just chopping people's heads off and shit, and fucking wild boars, the use of the wild boars and shit. That's inspired filmmaking. How did it come to this? How did we go from Evil Speak all the way to Hyenas? Woof. Man. Yeah. Yeah. The worst part, Ronald L. Sam said the fact that it got greenlit. Yeah. The fact that it got greenlit. Left Handed Jedi says, Richard Mull in The Sword and the Sorcerer was my intro into his work. Awesome. Josh Lee says, but it was worse than the Witchcraft series. Josh Lee says, but was it worse than the Witchcraft series Aaron watched? Well, we all watched that, not just Aaron, but we all have PTSD from the Witchcraft series. I say yes. I say yes, this movie was worse than Witchcraft. Because at least Witchcraft did not take itself seriously. It didn't. It knew what it was. Plus, it didn't fade. We got the titties. We got the titties. We got the gore. They were cheap and it was terrible. But it didn't take itself so seriously that it became a parody of itself. This film is beyond the pale. Because it presents itself as a serious fucking horror film. It's a parody at best, you know? Whatever. But, plus titties. Yeah, titties. It helps. It helps to at least elevate the bar, you know, out of the sand, you know? But let us know down there in the comments below. And you gotta ask Aaron. Aaron. See, Aaron Reese, the latter Witchcraft films withheld the titties. I felt burnt. That's true. They did kind of slack off on that. But the Witchcraft films overall, better than this movie. Better than this piece of trash. So, I apologize if you had to watch it. It's out there. And I was hoping for one thing, at least something, and we did not get any of that. It drops the ball on every single thing. This is lazy filmmaking. This is unfortunately the type of trash gig that a lot of long-term career directors who have great highlights in their filmography, this is the kind of like trash that brand new people, new faces, new unrecognized faces, they typically get thrust into these films. People willing to take their clothes off, people, you know, the kind of like alt actors who have tattoos or piercings, and then we can throw them in these movies, and then we have this old director who is like, you has a number of films under his belt, who knows how to handle himself, throw it to him, let him cut a pay, let the DGA cuts him, lets him take the film, cuts a paycheck. Over and done with. Let's get the fuck out of here. It's unfortunately, we've talked about them before. You know, it's just a shame that such a film was in the hands of such a veteran director and he had so little to work with. So, Tang Wilson says, titty flashing does not earn it any points for me. I'm so fucking sick of that tactic. I can see where you're coming from on that and I can agree with you. I can. I can agree that it is a cheap tactic to try and pull, but it can't elevate the bar when the rest of the movie is just rock bottom of the garbage can trash. When it's the fluid that accumulates at the bottom of the dumpster. You know? The stuff that's leaking out of the bottom. The stuff that, like, you know, eats a hole in the bottom of the dumpster. You know? Aaron Reese says, if there's one thing to be said for the Witchcraft series, it's that it took 11 movies for them to make a movie where absolutely nothing happened. True. No, Tang says agree to disagree. Okay, I got you. I got you, Tang. I do. Aaron Reese says, horror movies are about giggling like a 13-year-old while exploring life's deep lessons. A spoonful of sugar. Or titties in this case. And Tang says, just a waste of good tit shots, in my opinion. Yes. Yes. I hate a waste of a good tit shot. You know, a good tit shot is a terrible thing to waste. It really is. Sir Kev said, ew. Yes, that was a very, very visual metaphor I came up with. All right. So let's move on to our last one. And this one is both, this is fascinating. It really is. because when I started watching it, I was actually kind of confused. But then I understood what I was watching. So let's dive into this one. The last one we have tonight, released April 20th, 420, 2020. So 420, 2020. It's right. That makes it a pandemic film, obviously called Corona Zombies. Let's check out this trailer. Cue up the terror tube. Omnivore Sports is next week in horror, exploring titties in the witchcraft series. That was a few seasons ago. Yes, that was the trailer for Corona Zombies. So, fuck. Corona Zombies. Oh, man. Directed by Charles Band. You know him from Full Moon. Directed by Charles Band, written by Kent Rudebush and Sylvia St. Croix. Starring a cast of characters. Obviously, Cody Renee Cameron, Robin Sidney, Pavel Betty, Russell Coker, who was a Corona Zombie in this one. Russell Coker, and Russell is hanging out in the live chat. At least I think he's still here. Russell Coker, Donald Trump appeared in archive footage, Chris Zulch, and a number of other individuals. The cast is small in this one, despite what you saw. So, Ronald Sam says, this looks gloriously awful. So, Joshua Lee brings up, it was basically clips of two, okay, so, here's the important thing to know about Corona Zombies, because Charles Band, if anything, John Monahan says, I feel like I need to shower after that one. Yeah. So Charles Band knows how to make a movie under any circumstance. He knows how to put a movie together. It doesn't matter what's going on. And something like the pandemic is not going to slow down Charles Band from doing anything. And obviously the coronavirus, the panic, the lockdowns, all the craziness. Obviously, you know, this was a ripe opportunity to make a movie based upon what was going on. And of course, there were many films inspired by the pandemic, whether it was the psychological horror of being stuck in one place for an extended period of time with other people, or it was, you know, the fear of other people being contagious. The pandemic films are not new, but obviously the media's portrayal of what was going on lent itself to this kind of hysteria that made this an area made the pandemic a gold mine for making movies. Charles Band was no different. Full Moon Features brought this bad boy out here. And yes, Joshua Lee is correct. There was a little bit of footage that was put together by Full Moon that was used to piece this movie together. But not a lot. That's why the cast is so small. Obviously, you saw some sequence in there. You could tell by the cinematography. The cinematography of what Full Moon did obviously matches the technology that we had, the camera technology we have here in 2020. Okay, when that, or 2019 and 2020, when that happened, because this was shot fast. The reason the other parts of the movie look so different is because pretty much the entire movie is a little bit of what Full Moon did, and repurposed footage from two other films, which was Zombies versus Strippers, and I believe Hell of the Living Dead. So Zombies versus Strippers came out a few years before this, but then Hell of the Living Dead, I believe, came out, if I double check this, back in 1980, and it was an Italian horror film, which necessitated it being redubbed. So they dubbed lines over the old Italian stuff, which is why none of it matches up. And it's absolutely ridiculous. And were just fucking ridiculous as shit. So they took two older films. One that was really, really low budget that kind of underperformed, which is Zombies vs. Strippers. And then, of course, Hell of the Living Dead, which is an old Italian zombie film. And then cut them up, restitched them together, and then put in some of their own footage in order to kind of bridge that gap, and gave us Corona Zombies. Obviously, the cheapest and I guess most efficient way that you could do that. This is the pandemic by way of Charles Band. This is pandemic horror by way of Charles Band, as only Charles Band can do it. Sarcasm brings up, Wes Anderson did it. Asteroid City was a not so subtle take on the loneliness of the COVID lockdowns. Agreed. Absolutely. It was a chop film. Yes, Aaron Reese. I guess it's a good way to describe this. It was a chop film. Take two other films, hack them the shit up, stitch them together in order to make another movie, then shoot a little bit of your own stuff on your own little studio where you don't have to bring a whole bunch of people in, and then throw that in there as well. Joshua Lee says, if fair use was a film. I agree with that. If Fair Use was a film. It's hilarious. And I found this interesting. The film, obviously, for those who haven't watched it, you know, I don't want to say, this is still within, it's 2020, so we're still within the moratorium for spoilers. So I'm not going to spoil the ending or how it all plays out for you. You saw a lot of it in the trailer, okay, as to what was going on. But the idea that the idea behind this was that this is not the first time that we've seen, obviously, big global events like pandemics, epidemics, whatever, inspire films to come out behind that. Because despite its schlockiness, despite its cheapness, you know, and it was entertaining. So Russell, if you're still hanging out there, if you're still hanging in the chat, let me know if you are. I thoroughly enjoyed it. I enjoyed what you brought to it. I really do. So Rave Dark says, can you not polish this one to get me to watch it? It's still a very hard no. Raven, I think you'd enjoy it. I think you would. Going in, if you understand it, okay? You can't take the film seriously but this is the important thing. Films like this, films like this are important. And I know that sounds weird. To some people, that's going to sound weird, that films like this are important. But I think you understand, I think a lot of you understand what I mean when I say that films like Corona Zombies are important. And the question is, why are they important? Because the whole reason that we love horror films, the whole reason the horror genre is what it is and why it is the best, the greatest genre out there, the reason why it mixes like chocolate and peanut butter with every other genre, okay? Everything else, romance, comedy, you know, even westerns. Hell, Dust Devil is a horror western, you know? So the whole key to this is that the public at large, people, the audience, needs a way to be able to decompress from what is ailing them in the real world. The shit that we face, the existential threats that we face, the things that challenge us, that we come into, Bone Tomahawk, thank you, Lieutenant Jedi. The things that we come into, that we come across, that we have to deal with in real life, oftentimes can feel insurmountable. What the horror genre allows us to do is to take something like the pandemic, when people were freaking out, and it was an objectively awful time. I myself know, because I was, the job that I was in, I was classified as essential. I was an essential worker during that time because it was, you know, during the summer, it was 2020, and I was essential because I was dealing with electricity, plumbing, HVAC, and stuff in Texas. So I was a necessary worker. I was exposed more times than I can count. Luckily, you know, we had strict policies in PPE, but people were still coming down with it. We lost people living in the apartment complex that I was working in. Families who, you know, who were holed up, who were quarantined, people caught it because they decided to go out, and we lost people. Saw it firsthand. Objectively an awful time. But when we're faced with these things in reality, whether it be a pandemic or whether it be a war or whether it be political unrest, it doesn't matter. When we are faced with these things, we need to be able to internalize them. We need to be able to compartmentalize them. We need to be able to reconcile them. And that is what movies like Corona Zombies, for all its ridiculousness, for all of its tongue-in-cheek satire, for all its cheapness, these are what these films allow us to do. They allow us to look at the thing that stands in front of us at a different perspective, to change our vantage point and compartmentalize these things a little bit easier. Okay? Not in an effort to make us take them less seriously, okay? But to realize that we can, these things are not so insurmountable. These things can be gotten past. We can, at a point, remember to laugh. This is the comedy in the face of tragedy. This is reminding ourselves that we are alive, reminding ourselves that we can survive, reminding ourselves that this is not the end of everything. So that we don't fall into those pits of existential dread that keep us from doing anything. These kinds of films are what is necessary. necessary for not only, you know, for society in and of itself. That is the role that horror has always played. That is why I love making horror films. That's why I love being in horror films. I love seeing the process. I love seeing not only how the sausage is made, but also internalizing how the audience is going to take this. How are they going to view this? What's it going to do for them? Will they come away angry? Will they come away, you know, excited? Will they come away inspired to do their own stuff? Will they fucking hate it? I don't fucking know, and I don't care. I don't care what the reaction is, just so long as they have that reaction. So as long as they can internalize this. And for all of its ridiculousness, what anchored me to this movie and allowed me to enjoy it more was the fact that I lived through this, that we all lived through this. We lived through this motherfucker. We saw it firsthand. You know, we were there. And now we can see it reflected through the lens of horror comedy, of satirical horror comedy. And that is important. And that's why it is the necessity of parody and levity in the horror genre, which I think is what's so, it that makes films like this, even films as cheap as Corona Zombies, so important. Aaron Ray says, it's like a drip feed. We use the humor and hyperbole to take in the legitimate horror a little more slowly so that we can process it better. Agreed. In real life, it hits us like a truck. Horror allows us to take it at our own pace, to sit back and take it in piece by piece, like the narrative in front of us. And that is important. It allows us to compartmentalize. It allows us to survive. And that's the point. Left Hand Jay says, the role of the storyteller has been a cornerstone since the beginning. Absolutely. Absolutely. Sir Kaz says, my favorite quote from Robert Heinlein, I found out why people laugh. They laugh because it hurts, because it's the only thing that'll make it stop hurting. That's the key. Comedy is the key, and it blends so beautifully with horror. Look at Shaun of the Dead. Brilliant stuff. Look at Tucker and Dale versus Evil. You know? These are the highlights of it. Horror comedy is fantastic. You can go back even further. Let's look at Death Becomes Her. One of my favorites. Bruce Willis, Goldie Hawn, Meryl Streep. Three, you know, top-notch fucking actors. Legit, I would say, probably the heights of their career. Made that horror film. That's a horror film. A Frankenstein-inspired horror film. And it was fucking brilliant. And hilarious. So... Ah, Casey Cooper, yes. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, you owe me a Coke. Jinx! So yeah, that's the key to this one. That's why I enjoyed Corona Zombie so much. I don't want to spoil how it ends. You may be able to predict how it ends. But remember, it's a Charles Band film. This is Charles Band, the mind that gave us Puppet Master, the mind that gave us Demonic Toys, the mind that gave us, you know, goofy stuff. We've talked about plenty of Full Moon Features films here. Full Moon has a place, you know, just like Troma does. You know, and this was their effort. This was their entry. This is what they brought to the table. And given what was going on at the time, it's what needed to come to the table. So if you haven't had an opportunity to watch it, you definitely need to get your AO. Yeah, it's on Tubi, so you can watch it for free. Definitely go check it out. John Monahan said, this is a Dr. Demento kind of film. Absolutely. Absolutely. So got to give it that. Enjoy it for what it is. That you're going to be flipping between 2020 cinematography and 1980 cinematography. And if I remember correctly, let me double check that. And 2012 cinematography. So a film from 2012, because Zombies versus Strippers was, which is a lot of where the sexy stuff comes from. The Zombie versus Strippers was 2012, and that was Alex Nicolau. So, you know. Whatever it was, but Zombies versus Strippers, and of course, was it Hell of the Living Dead? So, which I remember, if you want to check that one out, here's what's interesting, is that if you get the opportunity, you can watch Corona Zombies, and then you can go back and watch Hell of the Living Dead and Zombies versus Strippers, and you can see what they cut out and what Charles Band used in order to stitch together his film. I think that's the kind of the best part of this movie, is watch Corona Zombies, and then watch where they took those movies from, and see how they altered them. In order to make this story. So cool stuff there. So, you know, for one, you get three. For one film, you get three. You know? Definitely. All right. So the question that I have for the audience tonight regarding this and the importance of these kinds of films and the timing of these kinds of films. What has been your, and I know all of you went through it same way I did, and all of you have your own horrible and heartbreaking experiences, you know? Oh, Hello, Living Dead is on Tubi as well. Thank you, Sarcasm. What has been your favorite, or what do you think is the best pandemic horror film? Whether set during the pandemic or inspired by the pandemic, what has been your favorite or what you think is the best pandemic horror film? Let me know down in the comments below or weekendhorror@gmail.com. Love to hear your thoughts on this one. And of course, you know, if you happen to watch all three movies, what you think of that as well. But yeah, favorite or best pandemic horror film. Really curious about what people think about that. All right. John Monahan says, I'll give it a chance. The voiceover stuff will be worth it. Absolutely will. Absolutely will. Ooh, Contagion. Good pick, Travis Brown. Sir Kevin says, Asteroid City. Loved it. Love Wes Anderson. Absolutely. Ooh, another love, more love for Contagion. Thank you. Wrote it in the last name. Awesome. Well, that is the last film that we got to talk about tonight. Russell, I hope I did your film justice. I don't know if Russell Coker is still in the live chat, but I hope he hears this. But yeah. Ooh, Resident Evil. Yeah. And Andromeda Strain. Nice, Joshua Lee. Michael Crichton. Very good. But given that was the last film to talk about tonight, y'all know what time it is. It's trivia time. Yes, it is trivia time. I didn't mean to let that play twice. That's my bad. Oops, sorry, Raven. Anyway, so it is trivia time. So I've got the live chat up right now. Be the first person in the live chat to get this. I'm so sorry, Raven. I didn't mean that. I really didn't. I thought I hit pause on the deal. I really did. That's my bad. You can totally blame me for that one. Oops. Be the first person in the live chat to get the correct answer to this trivia question. I swear, Raven. I swear it wasn't me. It's not my fault. Let me know if you get that reference. Let me know if you get that one. Come on. I know some film lovers out there. Anyway. All right. So be the first person in the live chat to get the correct answer to tonight's trivia question. You will win a special item from the Weekend Horror Store. Don't forget, we recently added two new items, a brand new No Lives Matter Michael Myers coffee mug and a Friday the 13th style camping mug. That's also a No Lives Matter. So yeah, I don't have a picture of here. I'm holding up empty handed. But check it out. It's on Teespring right now. The link is in the description, and you can see those. I think they're really cool as shit. So definitely check those out. I know some of you are getting some very soon. So let me know. Remember, put those pictures up on the Discord so we can see your prizes. Anyway, here's our here is our trivia question tonight. Be the first person to get the correct answer, and you will win a special something from the Weekend Horror Store. What was the name of the pandemic-inspired slasher film penned by screenwriter Kevin Williamson? What was the name of the pandemic-inspired slasher film penned by screenwriter Kevin Williamson? First person with the correct answer in the live chat wins a special item from the Weekend Horror Store. Who is going to get it? No, Omni. The answer is not titties, although that would be kind of cool. So, what was the name of the pandemic-inspired slasher film penned by screenwriter Kevin Williamson? Raven, I hope you didn't send the third TP shirt. I did not. Oh, boom, here they're coming in. Wow, quick. Wrote it, no last name. Yes, you are correct. The answer to that is Sick. Yes, Sick. Came out 2022, penned by Kevin Williamson, about some individuals who are stuck during the pandemic and get menaced, or go out to a cabin during the pandemic to quarantine and get menaced by a slasher. So if you haven't checked that out, definitely go and see it. But congratulations, wrote it, no last name. You got it. You were the first person. Joshua Lee got it as well. Angel Rivera got it as well. So did Sarcasm. We'll write down wrote it, no last name. And Rodent, I hope you got your new t-shirt. Let me know. Did that come in the mail? It should have come in the mail. You know, after you told me what happened. So let me know if that got to you. All right, but we will get that to you. Andrew Vera says, let me see. Raven says, hope you didn't send another third TP t-shirt. I did not. So, no, I didn't. So, Casey Cooper says, not my fault, but Buddy Holiday. No, I was referencing Blues Brothers when Belushi was talking to Carrie Fisher. And he's like in the mud And he takes off. He's like, baby, it wasn't my fault. You know. All right. But congratulations. Wrote it no last name. Well done. We will get that printed and shipped out to you. I'm kind of curious. Make sure that wrote it no last name. I hope you got that. Hope you got that shirt. The last shirt that I sent you. I hope you did. So I hope that came in the mail. So let me know. Let me know if it did. It should have gotten to you by now. So here's hoping. Fingers crossed. All right. But that, Horror Fiends, will conclude this episode of the Week in Horror Podcast. All right. Thank you all so much for joining us. We truly hope you enjoyed the show. And if you did, smash that like and subscribe button. Be sure to hit that bell so that you never miss a future episode. Join us next week when we look back at the epically savage Evil Dead Rise, the twisted and gory adaptation of Stephen King's The Dark Half, the German zombie horror Virus Undead, and the classic 80s space parasite horror Creature. Be sure to check out Josh Olson's store over at BadSamurai.store, where he does all the awesome artwork you see splattered all over our merchandise, which you can find over at Teespring. And for more from Week in Horror, check out all of the bloody links that are down in the description. Follow us on the socials for the daily splatter. Join our Discord for watch parties, big announcements, all kinds of horror shenanigans, and support the show through channel memberships, super chats, PayPal, or even through our Patreon. That's how we do all this good stuff here. All that other stuff does bring in some income, but it pretty much is PayPal, Patreon that keeps us going. So join us. What are you waiting for? $1 a month. Come hang out with us. As always, thank each and every single one of you for being the greatest audience a horror film podcast could possibly have. I've been your host, JL. We will see you all next week. And as always, you know what it is. Stay scared.